NSA, USA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. This month we are commemorating the 13th anniversary of this broadcast, or at least something that sounds like it, in all of its transformations and permutations as vegan animal liberation, meaty infiltration. Yes, it was January of 2001 when we began on our very first radio station, KRLA, in Los Angeles. Just prior to that, I had organized the very first World Fest, a vegan festival in the Los Angeles area. And when going around to various LA radio stations to promote World Fest, I met a producer at KRLA, Suzanne Lachan, who suggested that my background in broadcasting and vegan animal rights activism should become and could become a radio show. KRLA had weekend hours available at a price, and she suggested that I solicit advertising sponsorships for vegan and cruelty-free products and services to pay for broadcasting airtime, which I did, and somehow it worked, and the rest is, it's either history or a blur, I don't know, 13 years or both an eternity and the blink of an eye, really. I mean, really is unexpected and inexplicable that we've managed to broadcast 13 years, first starting with that station in L.A. I mean, I can still see Suzanne Lachan behind the glass there crying, just about every story, basically. Then we quickly after that added a station in San Francisco. We've been on CBS and Clear Channel radio stations, the Air America Radio Network when that existed, now nationally syndicated through the Genesis Communications Network. I hear Man Cow has just joined GCN, and Alex Jones is on GCN, and I'm probably the one, to make them look normal, I guess, GCN. This is the first food show on GCN. Yeah, 13 years doing a program I thought would last, I don't know, a few weeks, right? Certainly, really, after offending most advertisers, who would be on the radio stations, who run this program, all of those peddlers of flesh and bovine mammary secretions, pharmaceuticals and all, I really thought, it was like on Gilligan's Island, this would be a 3-hour tour, like on Gilligan's Island. We are now lost forever in this vegan world, but then again, what greater honor could there be than serving animals and not on a plate with ketchup, but serving animals by presenting a program on their behalf. So somehow we've managed to survive the 13 years. I'm pretty sure the owners of the radio stations, the people in charge, basically I don't think they've really ever listened. I think that's why we're still on. Right now, they're probably off, yeah, I don't know, getting drunk, watching a football game, or, you know, maybe they're watching their tapes of pro wrestling, you know, and, you know. So they're there counting their dollars, watching commercials, listen, you know, on their TerrorVision set, you know, on behalf of the slashed food industry. And here I am, well, they're off watching them. I'm trying to undermine that industry, it being, you know, the true axes of evil when it comes down to it, you know, McDevils, Murder King, Wendy's, Kills Jr., Jack the Ripper in a Box. Yeah, the people running the radio stations, running this show, have no idea, you know, that I'm just trying to undermine it all, that I'm trying to end all chicken eating, you know, just by, you know, and I hope Suzanne LaShawn is listening now. I mean, with all the tears running down her cheeks there, I was trying to get her to stop eating chicken. And, you know, 13 years into it, we do report that 97% of store-bought chickens, you know, were contaminated by deadly bacteria, much of it antibiotic resistant. Isn't it amazing? I mean, the Foster Farms, epidemic continues, you know, it's food poisoning, salmonella and all. But what happens is the USDA shut down a Foster Farm plant, not because, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people around the country are getting sick, but because they saw a cockroach walking in the plant. Now, my concern is for that cockroach, that I don't want the cockroach eating anything there in such a filthy, disgusting environment as Foster Farms. But isn't it strange? And the news story says, a cockroach, you know, but they also refer to infestation. But doesn't matter. People all around the country can get sick from contaminated chicken, but a cockroach walks by? Very strange. Okay. And by the way, this program, if you're just joining us for the first time, I mean, it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. It's not a program for vegans. In fact, we do this in commercial radio because we want to reach out. You know, we want to say, you know, basically howdy doody to the fecal foodie, you know, the meat eater, the so-called meat eater. Hate to report, but that's what it is. If you do consume meat, you know, all the E. coli and all the food poisonings there, it's a poop burger you got. So it's, you know, it's like howdy doody, you know, every time you say hello to another meaty meal. You know, this is the show to get you to try to stop being that fecal foodie, you know. And here I was, trusted 13 years ago not to lose the license, not to blow off all the advertisers. Now I guess, you know, I can buy another 13 years. I'll just send them, you know, Austin Aries, the pro wrestling champ. Probably their hero, right? So he's on TNA. He called me the greatest broadcaster who ever lived. Of course, I would never call myself that. But since he said it, I'm only repeating it. Yes, I hate to admit that it is true by default, you know, because, I mean, as great as Walter Cronkite or Edward R. Murrow or, you know, Tom Brokaw or Larry King or Oprah may have been, still, they never hosted a vegan show, you know, the show which, when used as directed, can save the planet, can save billions of animals, can save your children, you know, so... It's interesting, though, the accolade, the greatest broadcaster who ever lived. I never expected it from, and maybe he gives me that for hosting the show for 13 years and not losing my mind, seeing all of the animal suffering goes on and all of the aberrant human behavior that goes on. I thought that had I been called the greatest broadcaster who ever lived, it would have been for the music stations that I... constructed over the years that, you know, really got high ratings and were very popular. For example, in Washington, D.C. I can reminisce right now, driving around Rock Creek Park, the sound of Jazzy 100 in the air. And, well, now, unfortunately, the sound at Rock Creek Park, snipers, sharpshooters, killing deer. Yes, the National Park Service has become a gang of Bambi killers. And we'll talk about this with Mr. X coming up on the program today, our undercover investigator who will continue his discussion from last week about so-called family farms versus factory farms. This coming up on the program today. Yes, on the program hosted by the greatest broadcaster who ever lived. Not my words. Austin Aries, huh? Because I host a vegan radio show. Not because I made 98.1 KIFM a number one station in San Diego. We were number one men 18 to 54, number two adults 18 to 54, with a 4.8 12 plus. And I know that most people won't understand this Arbitron talk. I'm just hoping that, you know, there's some radio station owner out there who will be impressed by those numbers and offer me a job again programming a music radio station. Yeah, I got a Billboard magazine program director of the week plaque hanging on the wall, but still, you know, it took KIFM to the heights of its ratings and popularity. Oh, by the way, and then that KIFM was in San Diego. I lived in La Jolla at the time, and I always visited the sea lions and seals, that colony there in La Jolla, harassed even, just seems, forever, right? And that goes on even to this day. We'll get an update from Andrea Hahn about what's going on there at in La Jolla. You know, if Olympics were held today, I think vegans would win just about every category. Also coming up on today's program, I think the most amazing athletic achievement imaginable, accomplished by my two guests who are coming up later today, Jeanette Murray-Wakeland and Alan Murray. You are not going to believe what this couple in their 60s accomplished. You're going to be totally amazed. I think it might be the greatest athletic achievement ever. Also, Melissa Bray, fitness and nutrition expert, coming up. And animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione, who is very upset with a new campaign from Mercy for Animals that seems to be a partnership with pig killers. It's called Progress for Pigs. Tyson does a turnaround. We'll be talking about that today on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Hey, make a donation. Help us out. If you haven't donated in the last 13 years, click donate at Go Vegan Radio. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. That music reminiscent of my days at 98.1 KIFM, where I lived in La Jolla, and I visited the seal colony down there just about every day. And by the way, coming up a little later in the program, if I can manage time properly, I do want to talk about the next generation of GMOs. Ugh. Are you ready for Agent Orange GMOs? That coming up. And I invite you to support our program with a tax-deductible donation by clicking donate at goveganradio.com, where you find hundreds of free archives for you to hear. And if you'd like to advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products and services, email me. It's Bob at goveganradio.com. So the colony in La Jolla has been harassed since I lived in San Diego, which was the late 80s, and it seems like sometimes there's progress for protection for the sea lions and seals, and there are always those setbacks, and I don't know what the problem is, why nature can't be left alone there. But for an update, I want to talk to Andrea Hahn, who is regularly out there on their behalf, and let's get an update on the situation. Andrea, how are you today?
Oh, I'm just fine, thank you. The seals had a pretty good day today also, as the sea lions as well.
We are waiting
on a planning commission vote because we are still trying to get the Popping Season Beach closure that was voted on in 2010 by the San Diego City Council. Right now it is being held up because the Coastal Commission objected to an ESHA designation, which is environmentally sensitive habitat area, and they felt that would entail the beach to be closed for an entire year instead of for the pupping season. So they asked for a rewrite on that, and they asked instead to have it changed to the Protection of Marine Resources of the Coastal Act. So this has gone to the Planning Commission, and the Planning Commission, they got into a little trouble in their vote in December. Apparently another motion was put forward on top of this one where they suggested it was actually possible to still use shared usage during the pupping season. And the commissioners were so confused that they didn't know what they voted for. They've since asked to be able to have a second vote on the same thing. And I understand that's to be held on the 16th of January. And I also understand that the 24th of February, come what may, the City Council will be voting on the beach closure to go to the Coastal Commission, to go around the merry-go-round again, to see if finally we can get full protection for this seal colony during their pupping season.
What a bureaucracy to protect, just this incredible... gift from nature that, we can see these magnificent creatures there. And you say sea lions and seals?
Lions have themselves a little haul-out area on the La Jolla Cove Bluff. And they are being accused of the bird-dropping odor right now. Apparently there was a consultant to the city who determined that because the spray solution did not work, that clearly it was the fault of the sea lions who rest underneath. And the reason that the odor still smells like bird droppings is because the sea lions naturally are eating only krill and anchovy. And this is the very animal, by the way, that the sea lion puppy has a severe shortage of, for which they are starving in the Southern California area. And already they are rescuing sea lion puppies who are underweight. We have two that need to be rescued right now at the La Jolla Cove haulout.
And then there are separate areas then? The sea lions are in one area and seals in another?
The sea lions like to haul out on the bedrock. There are different stratas of rock. There's a sandstone, and that's where the guano is, where the pelicans had rested while they had roosted while they were an endangered species. And this really did build up, but it isn't any different than any other bluff area.
Andrea, we need to take a break. Stay with us, and we'll continue our discussion. Mr. X coming up also. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com on Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio. You'll find a Facebook page, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and two Bob Linden pages there. Also, listen for my commentaries on KPFA in the San Francisco Bay Area, Wednesday mornings, 8 o'clock hour, kpfa.org. We're talking to Andrea Hahn and trying to figure out how we can help the sea lions and the seals in the cove in La Jolla, who are just under constant harassment by, I don't know, mean-spirited people who can't seem to
basically
let nature be, right? I mean, what's
basically,
I
don't
why?
Understand.
Why?
People ask me, they go, how can someone hate a seal? I don't know. I don't know how they could feel that way, but they do. Some people are challenged by an animal that's, for instance, the sea lion, who's gregarious and intelligent. They fear that. They don't like ravens because they're intelligent. I can't help them. If that's the case, I just try to help those who can be helped and people that will listen and do try to look at the facts and the different information as it comes in. We were talking about the different kinds of strata on the bluff and that the sea lions haul out on the bedrock, which is washed clean at least twice a day by the surf. For some reason, they seem to prefer that. I imagine sea lions do smell. I visited Pier 39 once. But this is in a confined harbor, and it doesn't get washed over by the ocean with regularity as it does. The sea lions that are perched on Alligator Head Rock, which is on the opposite side of the La Jolla Cove, never smell, and they've been hauling out there for about 20 years now. So it is the bird guano still. The city is having problems, La Jolla in particular, with contractors who claim that they can do something with a chemical. For instance, the La Jolla Shores lifeguard tower that was just constructed is now having problems with their new windows because the lifeguards cannot see properly, something to do with the tinting. There is a map at the La Jolla Shores that has all sorts of beautiful figurines underneath it, and it just needed a nice, clear plastic covering that would withstand people walking on it and the sun. It didn't even last a year. This is presently in litigation. And, of course, the bluff spray was neither environmentally safe. They killed a good number of nesting cormorants when they first sprayed. They apparently were using detergents and things like that. They claim not, but that's basically what happened. And it is now covering the guano. It didn't eat it up. It's covering it. So when the surf comes up and washes over it, it's created some tide pools that has bored underneath and pulled the guano out from under, and it does smell still. In the middle of the day, on a sunny day, the pools actually turn a little black from the guano that seeps out from under. So they didn't really do their job. This is something that was promoted by the very people who have been proven to be anti-seal. Especially Melinda Merriweather. She was big on the spray solution treatment. And theoretically, it sounded like a good idea. If they want to handle the smell, I really would appreciate it if they'd find other people to handle the controls, because the people that have been running the show are incredibly destructive. And they don't seem to be resolving the problem. But as it is, I don't think it's the biggest odor in the world. It's not the sea lions. Don't even go to the bathroom on the bluff, barely. You maybe, on a big day, we'll see three macho alpha males that might have a little feces next to them that are further on up, and that's not going to account for the entirety of the odor, though.
Okay, so
the smell of a marine mammal is different from that of a bird, just like the smell of a human is different from that. We have different digestive systems, so this is nonsense.
And if you don't like the smell of a marine mammal, go inland a little bit, right? Because the aquatic life cannot do that. That's their home. And we have maybe a minute left, Andrea. How can people help the sea lions and the seals?
I would really appreciate it if people would write or call. Write to the governor, write to NOAA, write to the city council, write to your legislators, write to your congressperson. Because this is something that's been turned into an international issue. In particular, the Cove Bluff. It's a world-famous stinky area. They've got so much press generated against marine life in a state marine reserve, it's absolutely astonishing how little research has been done by the journalists to see what is actually going on. And it's very fortunate that Bob Linden is not one of these journalists.
Well, I've been on the side of the seals and aquatic life there since I was the program director at KIFM many years ago, and I'm sorry to see the harassment continuing. Aquatic life can't have just one little segment of the beach. There are plenty of places to swim, a little north and a little south of there. So, we'll continue following this story. Thanks for being with us today, Andrea Hahn, out trying to help the sea lions and the seals in La Jolla, who are under attack, as usual, by mean-spirited people. The children love them there. It's called, the children's pool. And the children voted to, keep the seals there. They love the seals. But, no explaining mean-spirited people who go out there and, clap their hands and bring, umbrellas all to, chase them back in the water, get them tired, live and let live, please, okay? It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We also have Mr. Thanks, Andrea. We have Mr. X on the line. Mr. X, undercover investigator who has been on the scene at family farms and factory farms and circuses, etc. We call him Mr. X to protect his identity. Of course, that's not his real name. How are you today, Mr. X?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Bob, for having me on your show.
Okay. We started our discussion last week about family farms versus factory farms. So where would you like to pick up the discussion?
Well, I'd like to throw out a name to you, and I don't see if this rings a bell by any chance. Have you ever heard of Robert Pickton? Does that ring a bell to you by any chance?
I believe that rings a bell in terms of he was the pig farmer in Canada who also was found guilty of being a serial killer of women and mixing the flesh of pigs and women, if that's the one to whom you are referring.
Indeed, that would be Robert, or better known by his friend Willie Pickton. He was convicted of about 7. He admitted to 49, said that his goal, he said that he wanted to do 50 because that was a nice number, and but he got sloppy in the end. But Mr. Pickton, as you referenced, was a pig farmer. He was not a corporate pig farmer. He was a family farmer, if you could call him that. So there's ample evidence right there. You've got Canada's number one serial killer was a family pig farmer.
That's the family farm. Yes, yes. It's the family that slays together. I don't know what. Okay.
No, I'm not. I want to preface this. I'm no way stating that all family farmers are serial killers of women or.
But they are serial killers. They are serial killers of other species.
Absolutely, and any family farmer that's been around for any period of time has certainly killed a lot more than 50 beings out there. And by discussing family farms, I'm certainly no way advocating corporate farming or factory farming whatsoever. Both systems are inherently evil, and it's the whole agricultural system. That needs to be, well, the ranching and the livestock industry that we need to get out of all entirely. It doesn't matter the size, it's the action itself. What if I was to tell you, what would you say to a guy that purchased $60 worth of laying hens? Would you say that that's a large factory farmer? Does that sound like a large, corporate farmer to you?
buying $60 worth? $60 does not sound like a large. Sounds like a small family farm to me.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, that's actually, back in 1920, Arthur Perdue, he bought $5 worth of lane hands back in 1920. In today's, with today's inflation, it'd be about $63 worth of hands. Arthur Perdue is the originator of Perdue Chickens, the second largest chicken slaughtering operation in the country, the largest in the Northeast, responsible for millions and millions and millions of chickens each year. Now he started off as a small family farmer. When we talk about family farms in Perdue to this day, we have these different people. Unfortunately, I think some animal rights groups, animal welfare groups, seem to be implying that we should buy all our food from cage free or from family farms. Well, if you go to the Perdue website right now, I encourage everybody to do this, and you just Google Perdue or Perdue Animal Welfare, their actual site says, quote, Perdue chickens are raised on local family farms, cage-free, in temperature-controlled housing, with fresh air and ventilation. This protects them from the elements, disease, and predators. They have constant access to food and water, periods of light and dark, and room to move about freely. Our poultry welfare program meets and exceeds the National Chicken Council's poultry care and well-being guidelines. So Perdue claims that they get all their chickens from family farms. I don't know what you say. I don't know what you say about this. I mean, are we saying that when we tell people to go get if you have to eat meat, if you have to eat chickens, go get them from a local family farmer? Well, Perdue, there you go.
It's huge, yeah. And then Foster Farms is a family business. They're huge, you know. Let's stay on the line, Mr. X. We have a little more to discuss coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. The website, goveganradio.com. Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Coming up in just a little bit on the program, I think perhaps the two greatest athletes in the history of the universe, what they just accomplished, I think is perhaps the most amazing athletic achievement ever. They're in their 60s. They're vegan. Just a little bit, we'll hear from Jeanette Murray-Wakelin and Alan Murray. Also coming up, Professor Gary Francione, who's very upset with Mercy for Animals for its new campaign, Progress for Pigs, Tyson Does a Turnaround. We're on the phone right now with Mr. X, undercover investigator. And was there anything else you wanted to say about family farms versus factory farms, because I know we also want to talk a little bit about the Rock Creek Park deer.
Yeah, absolutely. Since you mentioned Professor Francione is going to be talking about Tyson, I just want addition to Purdue. If you go to the Tyson website right now, and you click on, you'll see this statement from them. Quote, our relationships with the family farmers who grow our chickens and raise cattle and pigs that we use are some of our most valued. And then they go on from there. So
a family farm is a corporate farm. So I mean, let's get past that. I mean, Joe Maxwell is a vice president at the Humane Society of the United States. He also is a pig breeder and killer, he's responsible for the massacre of 50,000 pigs every year, who, if they were lined up single file, would be a line of about 28, 29 miles.
Yeah, Well, like I said, you know, I think the quintessential family farmer, you'd say, would be the Amish. And done a lot of, you know, I've seen hundreds of puppy mills out there. The Amish treat their dogs like, well, police, they should be arrested for the way they do it. And these are, I think, when most people think of the Amish, and I'm not, you know, bad mouthing all the Amish. So there's some really nice Amish people I've met, made friends with them. But the Amish, who got this idyllic, you know, Norman Rockwell, you know, think about them. They're some of the most sadistic people when it comes to their animals. They run their horses into the ground. They slaughter, you know, the pigs are brutally slaughtered. Their dogs are, you know, left in horrendous conditions. And these are, you know, supposedly the way we all grew up with. I just wanted to, so one other quick thing. It always kind of amuses me when you see these factory farmers or even, you know, family farmers. They always put that they put these chickens or pigs or whatever in the barns, and the statement, just like Purdue, it's one of these variations. This protects them from the elements, disease, and predators. Well, in regards to Purdue, every single one of those babies, because all the chickens are babies, are going to be killed within, you know, at the most 6 months, usually within several weeks. I think, you know, that you're talking about 100% kill rate. I don't think there's a predator on the planet that, you know, the coyotes or the wolves. Nobody has 100%, you know, success rate. So it's kind of, I think it's the ultimate in hypocrisy to say that we're doing this for the chickens' own good so the predators won't get them. Well, we are the predators. We're the murderers out there. We're the ones that are, you know, slaughtering them. As far as disease, what the Consumer Reports just came out and said that 97% of chickens have disease, some kind of bacteria or disease. So, I just wanted to throw that out there.
So you wanted to talk about the deer in Rock Creek Park? We have maybe a minute or so.
Absolutely, yeah. For anybody that the National Park Service is slaughtering deer in Rock Creek Park. It's in Washington, D.C., just a couple miles from the White House. There's only 300 deer in the entire park. The Park Service is planning slaughtering 106 this year. They just started on January 6th. It's out there. They killed 16 of them on that night. It was a -9 out there. All the hunters and, you know, all ethical hunters say that, well, if there's not, I don't believe hunters are ethical, but, you know, they always say you never want to hunt while stressing out the animals. Can't think of anything more stressing than hunting animals on it, you know, when you got a -9 degree temperatures out there.
How can people help? What can they do on behalf of the deer?
There's a Facebook page, Save the Rock Creek Deer Park. Please, Save the Rock Creek Park Deer. Just go to that, and you'll get all the information. Please contact the representatives on there and get them to stop this needless slaughter of the innocent deer.
Thanks for being with us today, Mr. X. Thank you on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Once again, welcome to our second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. We are attempting to reach Jeanette Murray-Wakeland and Alan Murray in Australia. And you know how it goes sometimes with all those strange numbers. And so we're just going to keep dialing away until we get the right combination of numbers. You're going to be amazed by what they did. It's like, you know, they are the athletic heroes of all time. All we have to do is get them to pick up the phone. So, in the meantime, I wanted to alert you to what looks like it could be the next shocking crisis in the world of GMOs. You know, I mean, we know that Roundup and Monsanto have given us the GMOs that are creating super weeds. You know, this is a major environmental problem. Super weeds. And we don't say, let's stop using genetically modified organisms in agriculture, do we? We don't. We wouldn't say, wow, this is really scary. It's a failure. It's an environmental risk we don't want to take, right? Super weeds, right? So instead of saying, let's stop using these GMOs, now we see Dow Chemical has developed a new genetically engineered seed. It's made with one of the major components of Agent Orange. So now, you know, that product Dow calls Enlist. Enlist. And what you find with Agent Orange GMOs is this really possible? So one of the major ingredients in Enlist is 2,4-D. It's one of the most widely used herbicides in the world. It's the third most commonly used herbicide in North America. And it was a major ingredient in Agent Orange, along with a chemically similar compound, 2,4,5-T. Okay, so we're talking about 2,4-D. So Agent Orange, which is a potent defoliant, was manufactured by Monsanto and Dow Chemical, and was the chemical weapon used most by the U.S. military in Vietnam from 1962 to 1971 in what was called Operation Ranch Hand. I'm sure glad we... Oh, boy. I don't know what to say here. The U.S. military sprayed nearly 20 million gallons of defoliants in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia in over 6,500 spraying flight missions with the purpose of defoliating forests to remove cover from opposition combatants and to destroy the rural food supply, forcing farmers and peasants to relocate to U.S.-controlled cities. The U.S. military began targeting food crops in 1962 with 42% of all herbicide spraying dedicated to food crops by 1965. With the induced rural famine that occurred, the urban population, and slum life I might add, swelled. Population going from 2.8 million to 8 million. The U.S. destroyed 25 million acres of agricultural land in South Vietnam, spraying in concentrates 13 times higher than USDA recommendations for domestic use. Much of the Agent Orange used in Vietnam was made even more toxic, contaminated with TCDD, a deadly dioxin. The Red Cross of Vietnam estimates that up to 1 million people are disabled or have health problems associated with Agent Orange spraying. There are estimates of 400,000 deaths and 500,000 children born with birth defects. And isn't it strange? We're concerned that Syria has chemical weapons. You know, we're concerned, you know, that Iran has nuclear weapons. We're concerned, you know, but the greatest concern really is that the U.S. has these weapons, I think, because it actually uses them. But hey, if you don't want the U.S. to go to war and use toxic chemical weapons like Agent Orange, well, let's put it to peacetime use as your food source, okay? And that's the situation. Look out for Agent Orange soy and corn. The USDA supposedly is leaning toward approval. I think that there may be about 5 or 6 weeks left to comment to the USDA. do we have faith in the USDA to do the right thing? I don't know. We're going to have a very revealing story about the USDA in the weeks ahead with the Barbie twins, and we often have our whistleblower, former USDA inspector Lester Friedlander, on the program. So I think it's going to take a massive, monumental effort to contact the USDA to say, hey, we don't really want Agent Orange food, Agent Orange corn, Agent Orange soy. So there's an article in Truth Out. It says food safety activists and environmental activists called the GMO seeds, Agent Orange, because it was that major component. So it will be referred to as that. Pointings, pesticide critics point to studies that have linked 2,4-D to health problems, those including non-Hodgkin's lymphoma type of cancer. Quote here, any increase in the use of 2,4-D with Enlist corn and soybeans will hit rural communities especially hard, as numerous medical studies have linked 2,4-D and related herbicides to increased rates of cancer and Parkinson's disease, as well as low sperm counts in farmers and birth anomalies in their children, quote, said Andrew Kimball, director of the Center for Food Safety. Denmark, Sweden, Norway, and parts of Canada have banned 2,4-D in light of such research, but the EPA considers the chemical to be relatively safe. In 2012, the EPA denied a petition from environmental groups to cancel the chemical's legal registration. So that's what's on the way, coming soon to the supermarket shelves near you, unless we really make something happen here. Sorry to say, Agent Orange, GMO corn and soy, because we have super weeds from Monsanto's Roundup. Huh? Okay. Well, shame on the Dallas Safari Club. There's a report from CNN today. The Dallas Safari Club has auctioned off a black rhino hunting permit in Namibia for $350,000, according to the club's public relations firm. Now, will that public relations firm have a job in the days ahead? Because I think public relations for the Safari Club are about to, devolve. It says, wealthy hunters gathered Saturday evening inside the Dallas Convention Center to bid on the rare chance to hunt one of the world's most endangered animals. Is this disgusting? Kind of makes you want to barf when you think about the Safari Club doing this, right? The Safari Club says the auction was done in the name of conservation. Really? To save the threatened black rhinoceros. So to save the rhinoceros, we must shoot the rhinoceros. All proceeds will be donated to the Namibian government, which I'm sure, is totally ethical and will, will save the rhinoceros as a result. Oh, man, oh, man. I talk about this for 13 years, and I still have, do I have the veneer of sanity when you have to deal with human behavior such as this? Animal conservationists, it says here, animal conservationists estimate that there are only about 5,000 black rhinos in the world, 1,700 of which are in the southern African nation. They are considered a critically endangered species by wildlife organizations around the world. Quote, "This is the best way to have the biggest impact on increasing the black rhino population," end quote, said Ben Carter, executive director of the Dallas Safari Club. Ben Carter says the best way to have the biggest impact on helping the black rhino population is shoot. Sacrificing one animal for the greater good of the endangered species is a move that critics and animal conservation groups call, perverse and a sad joke. Quote, "They need to be protected, not sold to the highest bidder," said Jeffrey Flocken of the International Fund for Animal Welfare. It also seems a dangerous message that, anyway, you get the idea. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. We have Melissa Bray coming up, also Professor Gary Francione, upset with Mercy for Animals. And it's what seems a partnership with Tyson Foods and, Tyson Foods and its new pig campaign. Okay, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. We are grooving. We're always grooving on Sunday afternoons. We start the program at 5 p.m. and go till 7 o'clock every Sunday live on the Genesis Communications Network with programs archived at goveganradio.com, where you can also click listen live. So, again, jump on it, get in touch with the USDA. We don't want Agent Orange GMOs, okay? We don't want Agent Orange corn and soy. Again, I apologize for not connecting with Jeanette Murray-Wakelin and Alan Murray as promised. It's live radio, and sometimes it's difficult to call a country that's on the metric system, and that's Australia. I guess I shouldn't keep it a secret what I thought was the greatest athletic accomplishment ever, which this couple in their 60s just completed. They ran a marathon every day in 2013 and then ran a marathon on January 1st, 2014, setting a record for 366 marathons in 366 days. They are vegan. She has overcome breast cancer. And as I said, they are in their 60s. So, Melissa Bray, who is a fitness and nutrition consultant associated with greenlightmeals.com, what do you think of that about, staying healthy, being vegan, and the role of exercise? Have you ever, vegans are really doing very well, in athletic competition and in so many different sports, but can you imagine that? 366 marathons?
Hey, Bob, I think that is amazing. And what a tribute to veganism and what's possible on this high-energy diet. It really debunks so many thoughts that people have, and I love hearing stories like that. There are so many examples. All you have to do is pick up a copy of Vegan Health and Fitness magazine to see so many great vegan athletes all over the world just accomplishing incredible things. So that's a very heartwarming story. I love that.
Mm-hmm. What got you interested in fitness and nutrition?
You know, a lot of people who got interested in fitness, and I think even Robert Cheek, this was his original path to fitness, was the Body for Life Challenge started by Bill Phillips. A lot of us who got involved in fitness took that 12-week challenge. Now you hear the word 12-week challenge everywhere, but Bill, I think it's Bill Phillips. Is it Bill or Bob? Pretty sure it's Bill. He's the one that founded the 12-week challenge where you take a picture of yourself with a newspaper, and he really showed people what you could accomplish in 12 weeks. So I believe Robert Cheek got involved that way, and I know that I was astounded at what I could accomplish in 12 weeks, and that was back in 1999, I believe, I took the challenge right after my daughter was born. So, yeah.
Okay. And why did you go vegan?
I went vegan for the environment. I'm a big tree hugger, and I showed up at one of those expos and went to the PETA table, and they had this literature that the number one way that you could help climate change and make a difference as an environmentalist is to go vegan. And I was astounded by that news and went home and researched it more and found out that it was the methane causing all of the, you know, problems in the environment. And that was from the factory farms. And I went vegan the very next day, cold turkey.
Wonderful.
2007.
Wonderful. You went vegan cold tofurkey. That's terrific. So, and
that's right.
And you know, the best study on climate change comes from the World Watch Institute, Robert Goodland and Jeff Anhang, saying that animal agriculture is responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gases.
I had heard 37, so I'd be interested in that link, Bob, when you get a chance, because I'm always looking for the statistics on this kind of stuff. So that's
it's called Livestock and Climate Change, Goodland and Anhang, and you can see their analysis of there was a UN Food and Agriculture Organization report a few years earlier that blamed animal ag for 18% of emissions, which still in itself would be more than all transportation combined. And really, are we out of time? Well, stay with me. We'll have to spend another minute or two on the other side. Time is flying today. We have Professor Gary Francione coming up also. A couple more minutes with Melissa Bray on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. And just before animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione, I have just a couple more minutes with Melissa Bray, who is the Greenlight Meals Fitness and Nutrition Consultant. Go to greenlightmeals.com. That's green, L-I-T-E, meals.com. Check out the menu and the meal plans, and Melissa could be your consultant, too. Melissa, we have just a minute or two. Just tell us, it's now, January 12th, so most people have, you know, given up their New Year's resolutions by now. But for those who haven't, how can we keep them on track?
Okay, I'd love to answer that question. You really think they've all given it up by January 12th? Well, I have a little more faith that maybe they haven't, but, you know, you could be right. also, with greenlightmeals.com, I just wanted to add real quick that if they find the Fit for Life plan, that's my, where they'll be working with me, use coupon code CustomFit30, and you receive $210 off the first month. CustomFit30, find the Fit for Life plan. Anyways, yes, I want to talk for a moment about sticking with your resolutions. The number one way that you can be successful is to avoid all or nothing mentality. It takes, they say it takes 21 days to form a habit. So avoid that black and white thinking that if you go off program, that suddenly you've blown it. it doesn't mean that you get to blow the whole day or the whole week just because you ate something off program. Talk logically to yourself to get yourself back on track. Say, no, that was just a couple hundred calories. I'm going to drink a glass of water the next meal. I'm going to be right back on track. Because we all have this battle within that we've got that little devil on our shoulder that wants us to just kind of throw it to the wind because making changes is challenging. So don't give into that. Remind yourself why you're doing this. You want to be a healthy person. It's not about a number on the scale. It's about eating whole foods that fuel your body, not vegan junk food, and doing this the right way. So avoid all or nothing thinking, black and white mentality. Get right back on track and talk to yourself logically and tell yourself it was just a few hundred extra calories or whatever it was. Do not use that as an excuse to abandon your program. Get right back on track the next meal.
Ooh, I like it. Makes total sense to me. All right, we'll come back next week and let's talk more about it. And I invite people to go to greenlightmeals.com, greenlite meals.com, and check out the menu. It's really fantastic. What would you say your favorite, you know, couple of things on the menu would be?
I love the deconstructed squash, the stuffed squash, the pumpkin curry stew, the smoothies, the snacks. We have so many amazing whole food meals, high protein, tons of vegetables, and we're getting some amazing feedback on our gourmet meal selection. So, yeah, I really want people to check them out. There's so many great things, too many to mention.
Okay, thanks, Melissa. That's greenlightmeals.com. We'll talk to you again next week. And right now, I know that there is a matter of outrage that must be addressed on Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione, the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school. His website, abolitionistapproach.com, and we invited Nathan Runkel and Matt Rice of Mercy for Animals to respond to what Gary might have to say about a new campaign today that Mercy for Animals has launched. It seems to be Progress for Pigs. Tyson does a turnaround. It seems like it's a partnership with pig killers to me, but what's going on here, Professor Francione?
Well, you know, Bob, I've been writing about, thinking about the animal rights, animal welfare issue for more than a couple decades now, three decades. And just when I thought it couldn't get any worse, it got worse. On Thursday, I saw this announcement from Mercy for Animals in which they announced that on the heels of a shocking undercover investigation by Mercy for Animals, Tyson's Foods, the second largest U.S. pork producer, has just announced a new set of animal welfare guidelines for pork suppliers that will signal an important new era and direction for the company. So I read on, an important new era and direction.
Wow.
There are four things that Tyson's, they make MFA, Mercy for Animals points out four things. First of all, Tyson, and this is, I'm reading from the MFA, from the Mercy for Animals announcement. So They're describing it very favorably, right?
They're cheerleading for pig killers, like
right,
one of the
Mercy for Farmers is Tyson is asking its contract farmers to implement improved quality and quantity of space standards in the design of any newly built or redesigned gestation barns. So basically, they're asking, they're not requiring, they're asking contract farmers who are designing newly built or redesigned gestation barns to give greater quality and greater quantity of space. They're asking them to do it with respect to those redesigned facilities. Okay, what does that get the animals? Close your eyes, Bob. What do you see? That's what they get. Okay, let's go on to the next thing. Tyson says it will fund research to further improve practical pain mitigation methods and encourage producers to adopt practices that reduce or eliminate the pain associated with these procedures, tail docking and castration, including the use of anesthetics and analgesics. Okay, so again, what does it require Tyson's to do? Nothing. What they're saying is that they will fund research to further improve pain mitigation. vivisection.
So Mercy for Animals is cheerleading for vivisection? New research on animals? Is this possible?
Yes. Mercy for Animals is cheerleading for vivisection so that we can get better pain mitigation methods that the producers will be encouraged to use. Not required, encouraged to use. Again, what do the animals get? Close your eyes. Nothing. They will. The third thing, Tyson's is asking contract farmers who manage company-owned sows to install video monitoring systems by the end of 2014. Okay, so with respect to those sows that are owned by the company as opposed to those that the company buys from other suppliers, they're asking for the installation of video monitoring systems by the end of 2014. Are they requiring them? No. What are they doing? They're asking contract farmers. So again, what do the animals get? Close your eyes. What do you see? That's what they get. There was one thing. There was one thing of the four that actually was described by MFA as containing a requirement. And that is, according to MFA, Tyson's has committed to discontinue the practice of slamming piglets headfirst against the ground to kill them. Tyson's will require contract farmers who manage company-owned sows to adopt an alternative method of euthanasia, this is called now, consistent with the recommendations in the American Veterinary Medical Association's Guide for the Euthanasia of Animals by the end of 2014. All right, so they're saying that they've got to adopt an alternative, I will not use the word euthanasia in this kind, an alternative killing method for piglets. For piglets who are going to be killed, they have to have an alternative method of killing, according to MFA. So I'm shocked.
I mean, it is shocking.
It is. So I went and I looked at the American Veterinary Medical Association guideline for the euthanasia of animals. And I'm reading about what the AVMA recommends for killing piglets. And I see that they're recommending various forms of gassing, captive bolts, electrocution, inhaled anesthetics, etc., and blunt force trauma. So I'm saying, wait a minute. They have to adopt a method of killing that is recommended by the American Veterinary Medical Association, which allows for blunt force killing. Now, let me just say this. Blunt force killing is hideous. But you know what? So is non-penetrating captive bolt killing. So is electrocution killing. So is anesthetic overdose killing. So is gassing. So is inhaled anesthetic. All of these things are hideous. So basically, you've got Mercy for Animals saying, hey, we've got to, let's cheerlead for non-penetrating captive bolt, electrocution, anesthetic overdose, inhaled anesthetic. That's what they're putting forward as a better method of killing. Do I think blunt force trauma is good? No, of course not. Do I think these other things are every bit as bad? You bet I do. You bet I do. Blunt force trauma may appear more violent. Although I don't even know what the hell that means in this context.
Really?
But I mean, the bottom line is, these other forms of, I mean, it's like, oh, wow, they're going to kill them in a nice way. The answer is no, nonsense. So
it's killing acceptable to Mercy for Animals. It's playing God. We decide what's acceptable killing.
Exactly. So I'm sitting there trying to figure out what's going on here. They're saying that Tyson's is requiring an alternative method of killing that is recommended by the AVMA, but the AVMA recommends blunt force trauma. So I'm trying to figure out what's going on. So I went over to Matt Rice's Facebook page, and I see somebody had just asked him the same question. And he answers, this is Matt Rice from MFA, whom you invited to be on the show, correct?
Yes, and Nathan Runkle.
Yes, the AVMA does allow blunt force trauma, but Tyson is urging producers to move to other AVMA-approved methods, which would include CO2, inert gas, captive bolts, electrocution, and inhaled anesthetics. And then Mr. Rice's next sentence is just shocking. None of these are ideal. None of these are ideal. No, it's not none of these are ideal. All of these are hideous. And this is MFA, basically. But let's just stay focused on the point. Rice says Tyson is urging producers. So then I go to Tyson's website, and I read their statement. And what they say about this blunt force trauma business is that, let's see, we encourage pork producers to discontinue the use of manual blunt force as the primary method of euthanizing sick and injured pigs. We encourage producers. We're going to break?
Yes, we're going to break. We will continue with Professor Gary Francione regarding this issue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. With Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. And a couple of things. Check out Vegetarian House if you're in San Francisco Bay Area and San Jose, 520 East Santa Clara Street. VegetarianHouse.us is the website. Vegetarian House is a 100% vegan, organic restaurant. And the next time you think about catering in the Bay Area, business event, wedding, get in touch with Vegetarian House, VegetarianHouse.us. And the world's largest vegan grocery store is Viva La Vegan Grocery in Rancho Cucamonga, now open in Santa Monica on Ocean Park and 28th. Go to the website, vivalavegangrocery.com. And we continue now with Professor Gary Francione. He and I are both outraged by the new partnership between No Mercy for Animals, Mercy for Animals, and Tyson Foods, or so-called foods, the campaign Progress for Pigs. Tyson does a turnaround. It's on the MFA website. And that looks like one happy, content pig, the picture on the website there, Gary. You know, that looks like...
It's really troubling. It's a terrible campaign, and obviously it is intended... The intention of this campaign is clear. It is to make people who want to continue to eat pigs and products made from pigs, to make them feel more comfortable. That's what this is about. That's all this is about.
But it's based
MFA wins because they declare that they've done this fantastic job of improving the welfare for pigs. They've done absolutely nothing. And right. I want to go back to that last point about the blunt force trauma. I look at the Tyson statement, and the Tyson statement's ambiguous. It says that they're encouraging people, their suppliers, to stop blunt force trauma, and then they say they're requiring it. MFA, at least Matt Rice on his page, says that they're encouraged. I think he does not use the word requirement. I think he says encourage, that they're encouraging their suppliers to use an alternative method of killing other than blunt force trauma. But the bottom line is, even if, and it's very unclear whether there is a requirement, but even if there is a requirement, so what? So they stop using blunt force trauma, which is hideous. And they use electrocution, which is hideous, or they use captive bolt, which is hideous, or they use inhaled anesthetics, which is hideous, or they use an anesthetic overdose, which is hideous. And the bottom line is, this has got nothing to do with animals. This is a win for MFA. This is a win for Tyson. It's a win-win situation. MFA wins, Tyson Foods wins, only the animals lose. And I have to tell you, I think this represents a really new low in this animal welfare fantasy that these people, this happy exploitation fantasy that these people promote. This is really a new low. And what this is basically mercy for Tyson. That's what it is. I mean, it's got nothing to do with animals. Absolutely nothing to do with animals.
I mean, MFA is cheerleading for something that's a suggestion for being possible in the future sometime. You know, I mean, it's like nothing's happening. It's like, well, you know, we hope to ask people to do this in the future. And MFA is acting like, oh, it's a big deal. Something's happened. Nothing's happened. MFA is linking to letters from Tyson. Here's a letter, a link. Here's the quote from Tyson, October 12th. Our company is made up of ethical, responsible, and compassionate people, and we believe the family farmers who supply us share our values. So Tyson gets the animal rights seal of approval from Mercy for Animals for doing nothing.
I mean, look, if this isn't proof to those people who care about animals, if this isn't proof that it's going in the wrong direction. And, you know, and also let me say, even if these four non-requirements were requirements, I would still say this is ridiculous. And the bottom line is that if we had a vegan movement, if we had a movement of people who promoted veganism as the unequivocal moral baseline, you'd still get companies like Tyson. You'd get companies like Tyson's would respond to that by making these sorts of changes. The difference would be you wouldn't have a partnership between these animal organizations like Tyson.
Yeah, it's harder to differentiate animal killers from animal advocates these days.
Exactly.
Very strange. Okay, well, thank you, Gary Francione. You'll be back on next week. And Nathan Runkle, Matt Rice, come on the program to discuss it. You have the open invitation. It's Go Vegan Radio, goveganradio.com.